top stories this hour. The United States marks 9/11's anniversary amid fresh doubts about the events. In Berlin, thousands protest a government move to gather personal information. Amnesty International calls on the French government to respect Roma rights. And also this hour in the U.S., the latest data indicates a record rise in poverty.
It is 6 p.m. at Ground Zero in New York and 2:30 a.m. here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is Press TV's World News.
Many thanks for joining us this hour. Well, exactly 9 years ago, four hijacked commercial airliners slammed into the World Trade Center towers in New York, the Pentagon, and a field in Pennsylvania.
Americans have now gathered in New York to remember the nearly 3,000 people who were killed in the attacks. Government officials, headed by Vice President Joe Biden, were among those attending the annual ritual of reading out the victims' names.
Michael F. Camerata.
David Ote Campbell.
Jeffrey Thomas Campbell.
Jill Moore Campbell.
Robert Arthur Campbell.
And President Barack Obama led a ceremony at the Pentagon outside Washington, D.C. There, he insisted that the United States is not at war with Islam and only blames al-Qaeda for the 9/11 attacks. Two of the hijacked airliners crashed into the Twin Towers in New York. The third hit the Pentagon, while the fourth plane went down in Pennsylvania. Well, the author of the book 9/11, The Big Lie, has told Press TV that the majority of people around the world don't believe the official U.S. account of the incident.
9 years ago, I was alone to explain that 9/11 is a trick organized by a part of a military complex in the U.S. with the help of the British and the Israelis. And now, 9 years later, most of the public opinion in the world don't believe the Bush version and agree with my critics, including in the U.S. Now 74% of the people in the U.S. don't believe the Bush version, including the two presidents of the official commission named by George Bush to support his version. So now the question is not if I always believe the same thing, but how is it possible that some people are continuing to support the official version? They are a small minority. We have a debate during 9 years, and now we see the shift of the public opinion.
Meanwhile, thousands of people have rallied in Berlin to express their concerns over the collection of their personal data by German government and private companies.
The demonstrators also denounced an accord which allows the U.S. to access EU banking information.
Data protection organizations have called for a demonstration in Berlin to show the German government that the public continues to fear the implications organized data gathering can have on their privacy.
We are fighting on other levels, like at the Constitutional Court. But this demonstration is here just to show we will be always there, and we are the watchdogs, and we will be back as soon as there is a new law we don't like.
The demonstrators want an end to the increasing surveillance methods, which, although they provide security, are not transparent. Indeed, files containing data listing people's every move, spending habits, calls, whereabouts, medical health, will end up on a central database that the government and large corporations can use and possibly misuse.
Never ever before a state or government collected as many data as now is a reality. And we do not believe that ANGI must know everything, or the German police must know everything, or the Minister for Internal Affairs must know everything. I need my privacy even in a very open world with internet.
Trade unions fighting for employee protection fear that the government's huge IT project Elena can only be detrimental to the worker. This database would hold information like the salary earned, the days taken off, the strikes participated in, and each employer would have to supply this information by law.
We can say that we live in dangerous times today because we are at a technological level which never existed before. Millions of bits of data can within seconds be assessed according to any criteria, and that's dangerous if the data falls into the wrong hands.
The government plans to introduce an electronic health card containing details of medical history and current health, which activists say could be damaging when one tries to obtain a particular job or even healthcare insurance. Thousands of people marched to defend their right to privacy and to demand laws enabling all processes to be much more transparent than they currently are.
The demonstration Freedom Not Fear drew 4,000 participants protesting against the grey area in civilian data collection. They fear that without clear boundaries and laws, a lack of data protection can have strong repercussions on our individual freedom. Unions, political parties and organizations have appealed to the population to participate in today's demonstration in large numbers, and so they did. Joanna Lemonnier for Press TV in Berlin.
Amnesty International has urged France to heed EU calls to end discrimination against Roma gypsies. The director of the rights group's Europe and Central Asia program has called on Paris to show it respects human rights. David Diaz-Jogue says French President Nicolas Sarkozy can start by ending a cycle of discrimination that has led to the expulsion of Roma gypsies from France. The European Parliament has demanded an immediate suspension of the deportations. France has expelled 1,000 Roma gypsies since July. It has drawn increasing criticism from the French public and the international community. Another blow to the administration of U.S. President Barack Obama, the U.S. poverty is on track to post record gain in 2009.
Well, the census figures for 2009 are expected to show a significant increase in poverty rates among the American people to the range of up to 15%. That means some 45 million Americans were poor last year on Obama's watch. The figures are to be released in the coming week as demographers expect grim findings. Experts say the ranks of working-age poor are approaching to low levels in the 1960s that led to the national war on poverty. It is seen as an unfortunate timing for Obama and his party just 7 weeks before the congressional elections. Analysts predict a tough struggle for the Democrats to persuade voters to keep them in power. Well, earlier we were joined by Ian Williams from Foreign Policy in Focus. He told us why poverty is on the rise in the U.S. despite Obama's pledge to fight the problem.
The unaddressed issues in America are the distribution of wealth, the maldistribution of wealth, where a smaller and smaller percentage are accumulating more and more of the wealth in their hands, while basically since the Reagan era, working Americans, what they call middle class in America, but most other places would be called middle class, working class, but working Americans have been on a permanent pay freeze for 30 years almost. And in fact, over the last 3 or 4 years, since the last 8 years, they've actually seen their real income drop. And that was even before the recession. So that's the issue. Until ordinary Americans get money in their hands, which they will spend and then stimulate the economy, then it's not going to work. And so until Obama addresses this redistribution of wealth, increases the minimum wage, and makes sure that the jobs that are created are sort of prosperous jobs rather than poverty line jobs, it's not really going to get that much easier in the next few years.
You're watching the World News here on Press TV. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. The United States marks 9/11's anniversary amid fresh doubts about the events. In Berlin, thousands protest a government move to gather personal information. Amnesty International calls on the French government to respect Roma rights. And in the U.S., the latest data indicates a record rise in poverty.
Well, coming up in the next half of the bulletin right here on Press TV, an ancient Iranian treasure is brought back home. We'll bring you the details shortly. Don't go away.
At least five Somali government soldiers have been killed in a bomb attack in the rest of capital Mogadishu. Police say the soldiers died when a roadside bomb went off in the south of the capital. Six others, including civilians, were wounded. Elsewhere in southern Mogadishu, two soldiers were injured in a car bomb, and police say they have foiled an attack on a seaport in the capital. Government troops opened fire on a petrol tanker after it rammed into the port's checkpoint. Security forces arrested the wounded driver and a gunman after blowing out the tanker's tires.
Taliban militants have attacked a U.S. military camp in southern Afghanistan. Reports say U.S. soldiers returned fire from inside Camp Nolan in Arghandab Valley. No casualties have been reported so far. The camp is one of a series of field posts the U.S.-led forces have set to prevent Taliban's infiltration into Kandahar City. It has come under several attacks ever since it was established in July. The campaign to secure Kandahar is a central objective of U.S. President Barack Obama's revised war strategy, but foreign troops have so far failed to prevent the Taliban's onslaught.
Indian-controlled Kashmir's summer capital has been rocked by yet another pro-independence rally. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets of Srinagar to protest against Indian rule. Our correspondent Shahana Butt now reports.
Tens of thousands of people took to streets on Eid al-Fitr Day in Indian-administered Kashmir to protest against the Indian rule of the region. Al-Fitr marks the end of holy month of Ramadan, during which Muslims across the world refrain from eating and drinking from dawn to dusk to get closer to God. The move came following the call given by top pro-independence leader Syed Ali Shah Gilani, Mirwais Umar Farooq, the chairman of Huriyat Conference, and the chairman of Jammu and Kashmir Liberation Front, Yasin Malik. According to police reports, the angry protesters set ablaze a government building and a police vehicle.
We want to continue this struggle till we achieve freedom.
Our message to the world on this day is to come forward for the rescue of people in Kashmir.
Police used tear smoke shells and live rounds of bullets to quell the protesters, during which some people were injured. Police said they were trying to ascertain casualties.
Behind me you can see thousands of people who have gathered to oppose Indian rule in Kashmir. This year the religious occasion of Eid al-Fitr has turned into a platform for pressing ahead a political will that is independence of Kashmir.
Pro-independence leader Yasin Malik has urged India not to push the people of Indian-administered Kashmir towards gun and violence, and he said that they should rather think of appropriate solution. The chairman of Huriyat Conference, Mirwais Umar Farooq, also condemned the recent killings in Kashmir and demanded a permanent solution to the Kashmir imbroglio.
The time has come when the people's right, the right to self-determination, has to be accepted. And the sooner the governments of India and Pakistan start a result-oriented, Kashmir-centric dialogue, the sooner we can have peace and stability, not only in Kashmir, not only in India, not only in Pakistan, but also in the entire subcontinental region.
Government forces have been battling for 3 months against violent demonstrations in the region, which were ignited by the killing of a 17-year-old student by police on June 11th. A total of 70 protesters and bystanders, some just school children, have been killed, mostly by security forces who have used live ammunition on rallies after being pelted with stones. Kashmir is in a grip of 20-year-old insurgency against Indian rule that has left more than 47,000 people dead. Shahana Bhatt reporting for Press TV in Indian-administered Kashmir.
Greek Prime Minister Georgios Papandreou has vowed to keep going with his government's austerity measures. Papandreou made the pledge in a speech on Saturday. He said he would lead, quote, the survival drive at any cost. The premier said the program will liberalize energy market, shake up the state railway system, and bring order to the hospital sector. Papandreou also promised to set aside 3.5 billion euros to protect the jobless. Meanwhile, about 20,000 protesters marched against the stinging economic moves. Road haulage unions also announced a new open-ended strike from Monday. Police arrested some protesters, including one who threw a shoe at the prime minister during his speech.
Well, India has lashed out at what it calls the regressive U.S. protectionism measures. India's trade minister, Anand Sharma, says the U.S. curbs on outsourcing could delay the country's economic recovery. He urged Washington to build confidence with the rest of the world. The statement comes days after state of Ohio banned outsourcing back office jobs. It also follows a recent U.S. law raising visa fees for skilled workers. New Delhi says the moves will hit its IT sectors. The U.S. measures seek to combat unemployment, which is nearing 10%. However, the row comes ahead of President Barack Obama's visit to India in November.
China has again summoned Japan's ambassador in protest over the holding of a Chinese boat and its crew by Tokyo. China has urged Japan to find a, quote, wise solution to the issue. This is the fourth time China has called the Japanese envoy this week. The dispute began on Tuesday when the Chinese boat and two Japanese Coast Guard vessels collided in the East China Sea, which is claimed by both sides. Tokyo suspects the Chinese vessel deliberately rammed the Japanese ships. Beijing and Tokyo had been scheduled to hold discussions later this month on issues relating to the East China Sea. Territorial disputes in the sea have repeatedly led to strains in Sino-Japanese ties.
In other news, Amnesty International has lashed out at Bahrain over its decision to suspend the operations of a prominent human rights organization in the country. The suspension came after the organization criticized the authorities over violation of human rights.
Amnesty International says Manama's decision to halt the activities of a human rights organization is part of its crackdown on the Shia opposition and rights activists. On Wednesday, the Ministry of Social Development appointed one of its own officials as the head of the Bahrain Human Rights Society. Amnesty says the government has effectively taken control of the center by putting one of its own representatives in charge. Earlier this month, Bahrain charged 23 Shia opposition figures and human rights activists with plotting to topple the government. Most of the men were arrested back in August. Two leading opposition activists among those charged are being tried in absentia. Saeed al-Shahabi is one of them.
When you see people now, in the past 2-3 weeks, having been dragged from their homes or taken from the airport into torture cells and being tortured beyond recognition, then that is not justice.
Human rights groups accuse the government of torturing and generally harassing the political opposition in Bahrain. They have called for an international committee to be set up to look into the alleged torture of the Bahraini activists. Manama has denied the torture allegations and accuses the 23 men who've been charged with offenses of instigating violence in the country. It says they formed a sophisticated terrorist network planning to overthrow the government. The authorities' crackdown on opposition figures comes just weeks before the country goes to the polls to vote in parliamentary elections.
An ancient Iranian treasure has finally been brought back home after many years. The Cyrus cylinder is linked to Persian King Cyrus the Great's 6th century BC conquest of Babylon. The first charter of human rights in recorded history is inscribed on it. Iran received the months-awaited treasure from the British Museum on Friday. It has now been transferred to Iran's National Museum and will remain in the country for 4 months. The handover comes after a months-long dispute between Iran and the British Museum over its failure to lend the treasure to Tehran. The British Museum had failed to meet a 2-month deadline set by Iran late last year. Tehran has sought $300,000 in compensation over the delay of the loan.
Well, that's all for this edition of the World News here on Press TV. Be sure to visit our website, presstv.ir, throughout the day for the latest updates on all the news that we've covered in this broadcast.